Okay. Now some practical advice. I'd like to start with some general advice. First is this idea of expectation, that we need to avoid expectations with any of this sort of practice. Unfortunately, mindfulness, like I said, is very popular in the modern day world, but it's seen as a quick fix. You know, give me something, give me the mindfulness pill. I want to fix my problems now. So if we have this short-term expect vision, we're going to have a lot of frustration. So of course, this is a long-term vision, and we need to have a long-term vision of any of our practices. In the short term, there will be a lot of variations. In the longer term, we will notice improvement. So we need to make sure that we're having a long-term vision of all of these practices. Also in terms of expectation, and this is something that I also fell into earlier, this trap, is not to have this expectation simply by acquiring knowledge, somehow our life will automatically transform. It won't. Now we already have quite a lot of knowledge about things, but our life is often still a mess. So remember, knowledge in itself is only the beginning point. We need knowledge as a basis for these practices. Then, of course, we need to implement that. We need to internalize that knowledge and make it wisdom. So knowledge is intellectual, wisdom is experiential. If we can bring knowledge into experience through meditation and integration into wisdom, then our life will start to transform. So, you know, we can have we can be the smartest Buddhist or spiritual scholar on the planet and have a miserable life. So we need to make sure that we're not leaving it at the intellectual level, that we are actually implementing these ideas, internalizing them, and making them our own lived experience. Then things will start to change. Of course, we're talking about inner transformation. We're talking about transforming our mind, our attitudes and behaviors and so forth. So it's very important in this to not make it a big outward display. Unfortunately, often people, when they get into the spiritual path, they make a big outward display of it and proclaim that they're now very spiritual, I'm a Buddhist, and sometimes they shave their head and wear all this funky spiritual clothing and make a big outward display of it. This is a sure sign that our spiritual practice is being hijacked by the ego, and we've just become a spiritual ego. And spiritual ego is one of the worst, because they have an air of superiority and they look down upon others. So we don't want to make our spiritual practice be hijacked by the ego. So therefore we're talking about inner transformation, and don't make a big outward display of it. Particularly if you're coming from a very conservative family or community, if you make a big outward display of your new spiritual practices which are not in line maybe with your conservative community or family values, you're going to have a lot of problems. So don't make a big outward display of it. Of course, as I mentioned in the first point of the six preconditions, Sangha is very critically important, because if we want to begin some spiritual sort of lifestyle, something has like sprouted in our mind. We need to do two things. We need to protect that, and we nurture it. So therefore, to protect and nurture the beginnings of our practices, we need that Sangha. We need the support. We need to get surrounded by like-minded people who can support us. We can support them. And not to allow ourselves to get into too many heavy negative situations that always simply overwhelm us. So we need to really protect ourselves a little bit and nurture that. Once our spiritual practice, of course, has become more developed and it doesn't get trampled, then, of course, we can expose ourselves more and more to difficult people, difficult situations, and not be overwhelmed by it, and actually use those difficult situations and difficult people to even go further in our practice. But as a beginner, if we unnecessarily expose ourselves to a lot of heavy negative influences, we are just simply going to get overwhelmed, and our little sprout of spiritual practice will get squashed. So we need to protect and nurture. And as we saw here in the point four as well, simplify our life. Often when people begin this sort of spiritual practice, meditation's involved, often people say, yes, I'd really like to meditate, but I don't have time to meditate. That is never a valid excuse. Yes, of course, now most of us probably have very hectic paths, very busy lives. We've probably got too much stuff in our day. Probably we don't have any free time now, but if we look at our day and see how many of those activities are very essential and meaningful and how many of them are just filling up time and often wasting our life, then again, if we reflect on this precious human life and death, we're going to see clearly how a lot of these activities in our life are just completely useless and meaningless. We're not going to want to waste one more moment of our time on them. And then suddenly, we're going to have time, space, and energy to devote to meditation and improving ourselves and benefiting others. And as I already mentioned earlier as well, this point about career versus spiritual life. It's not really a choice. Rather, we need to integrate the two. Because if we abandon our career, then we're probably going to have some financial difficulties, and two, how are we going to benefit society if we've given up the one thing we're good at? So rather integrate the two and make your career more meaningful as possible, and use your spiritual practice to use your talents to benefit society in better and better and better ways. Of course, we need daily practice. And remember, we said a number of times, practice is not just sitting down and meditating each morning. Practice is 24/7. Practice is what we do from when we wake up until we go to bed. So practice has two parts. Meditation, where we're internalizing, and then integration. So we need both of those. If we only do one of the two, we're not going to be very effective. If we diligently meditate every morning, but then we jump up and run around mindlessly as we normally do, any little benefit we've received from meditation will get squashed by our 14 hours of mindless reactionary behaviour throughout the day. Likewise, if we don't meditate in the morning, we're not internalising, we're not starting the day in a good way, it's going to be hard to implement these ideas because of our strong past habits. So we need that meditation practice to have a good start to the day and start to internalise some of these things so we've got a beginning point to start to work on these things throughout the day. Also very important, not only to have a daily practice, because remember the key to success is continuity. Continuity, of course, means daily meditation practice and continuing to integrate what we meditate on in the morning for the rest of the day. On top of that, it's going to be very helpful to do some regular retreat, at least once or twice a year, if possible, to do a retreat. And as a beginner, most recommended to do a group retreat, because group retreat is a lot easier, it's structured, it's led, you just have to turn up, and you get the group energy as well. If, as a beginner, we simply do solitary retreat, probably many of you are going to find that extremely difficult, because we don't have good discipline, and we have to motivate ourselves, and we don't have any group energy. So as a beginner, very much recommended to begin doing some group retreats on a regular basis, at least once or twice a year if possible. And that will give us a boost in our practice that can bring us to a new level. Now, unfortunately, of course, it's not easy to find good group retreats. But, of course, here, this organisation, the Garden of Samadhi now, is starting to develop, and then hopefully then over the coming time, then more and more be developing these group retreats, and I hope to be also coming back next year to hopefully run some more group retreats, maybe a little bit longer as well. Also, of course, most of you from the Bangalore area, there's also the centre that I'm involved with, of course, mainly in India, is Dushita Meditation Centre in Dharamsala. We also run, of course, a lot of programs there. If you have some time, you can come up to Dharamsala, follow one of the programs. Usually they're 9 or 10 day group retreat programs, very good programs, very affordable as well. Also, within the same organisation as the Tushita Meditation Centre, there is a centre in Bangalore as well that run a fairly active program, weeknight, weekend things. So that is called CKSL, Chur Kor Sum Ling, and they have a number of good teachers. Most of their teachers that they have at the centre are actually Western monks who are studying at Sera Monastery down near Bailakupe. And they come regularly to run teachings and retreats and events at that centre. So that's another possibility, particularly weeknight or weekend, to get involved in that. If you want to get involved in a little bit longer retreat, again, the reality is they're not so readily available. But one retreat that is readily available is the Goenka Vipassana retreat. This is coming from the Burmese tradition. And it's in many, many places, particularly in India as well. And it's by donation, so it's completely affordable. It's a 10-day retreat. The reality, of course, is it's quite hardcore, this retreat. It involves about 9 or 10 hours of meditation per day, and starting at 4 o'clock in the morning, finishing at 9 p.m. in the evening. So it's not something to do as a very first point. But if we have a little bit of meditative experience and a little bit of understanding of the spiritual path, then that could be a good option. Now, they're quite intense, but having said that, most people who do them, of course, find them extremely challenging. But at the end of the retreat, often people find that they understand the power of the mind and the value of meditation, and that can inspire them to continue to practice even if they don't continue that similar practice. So that could be an option to do. Also, of course, what you can do if you can't go to a particular place to do retreat, some retreats have been recorded. You can get the audio of the retreat and go through the audio yourself. Alan Wallace, of course, leads a lot of retreats around the world. And I think he's coming here for a conference in, I think, December. So he also, maybe then in the future, he may also start to lead some retreats here, I'm not sure. But he also has a website. He has an organisation called the Santa Barbara Institute for Consciousness Studies. And the website is sbinstitute.com, and on there he has a lot of podcasts, a lot of audio for retreats that he leads. He leads a lot of these shamatha retreats, this mindfulness training, also a lot of these four immeasurables practices as well. So you can find a lot of useful material there within these podcasts. They're free to download. Also, I on my own website, I also put a lot of audio from various things that I run. So my website is glennsvenson.org, and on there, again, I have a lot of audio from various courses and retreats that I run, a lot of other material as well. So if you want, you can find anything useful there. You can download it and use it. Also on my website, I have a contact page, so if you have any questions about any of the practices, then you can send me a message and I'll try and help you out in whatever way I can. Now what I'd like to do then is look at some daily life advice, how to sort of set up the day, structure the day. So again, in terms of a daily meditation practice, very much recommended to do that first thing in the morning, because that's when we're usually most fresh, most quiet where we are, and also, of course, it's a good start to the day. And of course, also, it's very helpful to set a very good motivation, not only for your meditative practice, but a motivation for the day, to sort of orient yourself for the day. I've got a little motivation here from His Holiness Dalai Lama that I'd like to read out. And he says the following: every day, think as you wake up. Today, I am fortunate to have woken up. I am alive. I have a precious human life. I am going to use all my energies to develop myself, to expand my heart out to others, to achieve enlightenment for the benefit of all beings. I am going to have kind thoughts towards others. I'm not going to get angry or think badly about others. I am going to benefit others as much as I can. And the short version of that is, every day, think as you wake up, I am going to benefit others as much as I can. And then in terms of the morning meditation practice, again, quality over quantity. So much better to meditate in a focused way for 20 minutes rather than sit there for 1 hour getting spaced out and distracted. And again, very helpful to do the morning meditation at the same time every day, because one of the most difficult things is to simply develop the habit. So if we can just simply have a habit that every morning at, say, whatever time, 6:30 or whatever, that's the time to meditate, then once it becomes a habit, it becomes more easy. Same time, also same length. So remember I mentioned earlier that it's helpful to set a timer for your meditative practice, because otherwise if you don't set a timer, on days where things are going quite difficult, we may just give up after 5 or 10 minutes. Then, of course, we're remaining the slaves of our mind and we're not developing any perseverance in our practice. Also, on days when things are going very well, we probably just keep going past the allotted time, and then, of course, what we do is we keep going until it starts to go bad, and then we stop, and the thing we remember most about meditation is how it ended. So if we're always ending in dullness and distraction and frustration, we're going to associate meditation with not such pleasant experiences. We're not going to want to meditate again. Whereas if we set a timer, things are going well, timer goes, we remember that that's how it ended, we're going to be enthusiastic to meditate again the following day. Again, if we find that we're getting very lazy with our meditation practice, either even doing it or during the meditation practice, again, as we saw in the faults of the mindfulness training, the antidote to laziness was faith, meaning to reflect on the benefits of the practice and thereby develop faith in the practice. The practice is going to bring us a lot of faith. Then we'll have a lot of aspiration to do the practice and we'll put a lot of effort into the practice. So if you find yourself, again, getting very lazy with respect to any practice, then it's good to reflect on the benefits of that practice and to get enthusiastic about that practice. Also, laziness can be in the form of getting caught up in lots of other activities. So again, here, reflecting on this precious human life and death, if we reflect on those, we're going to see how all of these other things that we get caught up in really are not bringing us anything. We're going to lose interest in those activities. And then, of course, within the practice here, the mindfulness practice, I think, as we saw here in these four mental balances, once we have really developed a very good, healthy aspirations and desires, the next key element in our practice is the attention training, the mindfulness training. Because if we don't put effort into that, this is the basis for cognitive and emotional balance. If we don't have a firm basis, we may put a lot of effort into cognitive and emotional balance without much progress, because our mind is just dull and distracted. So therefore, particularly if we're the sort of person who has a lot of dullness and distraction as a beginner, I think it's good to emphasize this attention training, the mindfulness training. So you may find in your morning meditative practice that you really emphasize the mindfulness training, and that is the main part of your morning practice, that you mostly work on this mindfulness training. But again, if you only work on the mindfulness training, then also I think that's a little bit imbalanced. It would be helpful at least to incorporate a little bit of the cognitive training, or particularly the emotional balance training that we looked at in this retreat. So from time to time, then maybe normally in a morning, maybe you're mainly just working on the mindfulness of breathing or looking at the mind as the main practice. But then every so often, every few days, maybe then you just do a little bit of mindfulness, and then the rest of the session you work a little bit on the Tonglen practice, or, you know, dealing with anger or so forth. Depending on what's going on in your life, you can emphasize different aspects of the emotional balance training that maybe help you to directly deal with certain issues that you are working through at the moment in your life. Also, what can be very helpful in the morning as part of the morning meditation practice is if there are certain situations that you're anticipating occurring that day where you anticipate it's going to be a very difficult situation and that you may actually react in a negative way, you can rehearse that situation. Perhaps you're going to enter into a very difficult meeting with someone at work. Then, as part of the morning practice, you can rehearse that and, based on these ideas that we've looked at in this retreat, rehearse that how you would like this difficult situation to unfold. So if you rehearse that in that way, then that can be help us to maybe be able to implement that when we are faced with that difficult situation. Also, as part of that, and this comes as part of what we do during the day, but I'll mention it now because it's relevant here, is that if we are about to enter into a difficult situation with a person where it may be confrontational, then usually when we're about to enter into this sort of situation, we come in very defensive. Already we're defensive. And so then they say something and we react. So we don't really want that to happen. So what we can do is use this Tonglen practice, this giving and taking practice, as a preparation. As we're actually physically approaching the person, in one or two breaths, we can simply take away their mental afflictions and suffering and give them whatever they want for their happiness. So we can do this Tonglen practice using one or two breaths or a couple of breaths as we're actually physically approaching the person. So then we are much more open and a positive state of mind and not so defensive. So that can also be helped as a good preparation. So back to the morning practice. Of course, in our attention training, the two imbalances are dullness and distraction. And we looked at some ways of prevention and cure. So again, to help prevent dullness and distraction, keep the session short. Make sure that the room conditions are suitable, meaning not too hot or cold or too light or dark. Make sure you're getting enough sleep, that you're not meditating after huge meals. Make sure you have a healthy diet. And then also, then as a cure for dullness and distraction, then developing this introspection. And really monitor when dullness and distraction are occurring and then simply reapply the mindfulness. Now, what to do during the day? And we can here look at what to do during the day in terms of these four aspects of mental balance. So again, motivational balance. So not to forget our motivation. So again, it's good to set a motivation at the beginning of the day. But then also it's good to remind ourselves of our motivation. What are our priorities in life? So there, as a beginner, it can be helpful to have certain triggers, certain things to remind us. So we may, where we work, we may have a little slogan or something that we relate to on our computer, if we're working on that, or our desk, that we can see occasionally to remind us of the positive direction we really want to follow in our life. So these triggers can be very helpful as a beginner. Then, of course, attentional balance during the day is, again, cultivating mindfulness. So again, not only to cultivate mindfulness in meditation, but cultivate mindfulness throughout the day. Again, at the beginning of the day, we can set a motivation to be as mindful as possible throughout the day. But again, as a beginner, we're probably going to forget that. So again, triggers can be very helpful. Triggers here can take a number of forms. One, of course, is pick a few specific tasks we do every day and make a conscious effort to really be present, to be mindful in those tasks. For example, brushing our teeth. Most of us brush our teeth at least a few times every day. So when we brush our teeth, to be present. Normally now, of course, what happens in the morning, we're running late, we're gulping down breakfast, maybe not even time for breakfast. We're brushing our teeth very fast, and while we're brushing our teeth, we're thinking about all the things we have to do during that day. Then we rush out the door, and then we think, did I brush my teeth? I can't even remember. That's how mindless we are. So therefore, when we're brushing our teeth in the morning, we brush our teeth while we brush our teeth, meaning we focus on the sensations of the toothbrush on the gums and all the sensations that go with brushing the teeth. Focus on that, not do that, and think about something else at the same time. In that way, we can really start to cultivate mindfulness. We can start to be present in everything. Also, another classic example is eating meals. Again, usually now we're so busy, we're thinking of all sorts of things, we're gulping down our food very quickly, we're not even really enjoying it, sometimes eating too much. So again, very good to be present with our meals, to be present with the sensations of the chewing, the taste of the food. Then we'll actually enjoy our meals a lot more than we do now. We won't overeat, and that is also a mindfulness practice. So if we pick a few of these activities and really make a conscious effort to be present in those activities, we're seeding the day with mindfulness. And you'll be surprised how much just a few of these things regularly through the day can really start to get us in the habit of being mindful in everything we do during the day. Also, in terms of triggers, we can use modern technology to our advantage. Most of us now have smartphones, iPhones, Samsung, all sorts of fancy phones. There are many, many apps now that you can download that do this trigger exercise. There's one simple one comes to mind called Mindfulness Bell. You put the app in, you can program it to trigger at certain intervals per day according to your disposition, 30 minutes, every hour, every 2 hours, whatever you want. When the bell goes off, you stop whatever you do and then do a little mindfulness exercise for a short time. Maybe you simply focus on your breath for 3 breaths. Simply that. Or you just look at your mind for 10 or 20 seconds. If you do that, again, maybe once roughly every hour when it goes, you'll be surprised at how that little exercise will really start to get you in the habit of being mindful and present in everything you do in your life. So we can use these triggers to help us to be mindful throughout the day. Then, of course, with that mindfulness training in the day, we are then developing our ability to be the observer or the witness of everything that's going on. So then on that basis, we can really work on cognitive and emotional balance throughout the day. In terms of cognitive balance, which we didn't cover much at all in this retreat, in terms of cognitive balance, then we can be mindful of all of our experiences and really trying to experientially see things as transient, as changing moment by moment, as interdependent. The more we can see these things in this way, the less emotional imbalance we will have, the less attachment, aversion, anger, mental afflictions. Also, of course, here, cognitive fusion, to really notice and avoid fusing ourselves and others in terms of mentally and verbally. If we can really notice that and stop thinking and speaking in that way, that's going to be very helpful as well for emotional balance then. And then, of course, in terms of cognitive training, then when we're faced with a difficult situation, to see that as an opportunity, not as a problem or obstacle. As soon as we see a difficult situation as a problem or obstacle, we have aversion, we magnify, we distort, we react, big mess. If we can see difficult situations simply as opportunities to develop and grow as a person, then we can stop the reaction. We can then actually work through that difficult situation. So we can use that, we can take that difficult situation into the spiritual path as fuel for our factors. And then, of course, in terms of emotional balance during the day, then with mindfulness, again, if we notice in some sort of stimulus we start to react with attachment and aversion to the pleasant and unpleasant, simply observe that arise and pass. And then instead of reacting, then we can use our emotional balance training to respond using loving kindness and compassion, empathetic joy and equanimity. And then also in a practical way, we can use this Tonglen practice that we've learned in this retreat. And a number of practical cases to do that is in our daily life, whenever we see anyone else around us who is obviously having some sort of suffering or mental affliction, then we can do this practice for them in simply one breath. We can take their mental affliction from them or suffering, we can give them happiness. Also, when we ourselves are caught up in any suffering or mental afflictions, we can do something similar with this Tonglen practice. One, because often when we are caught up in mental afflictions and suffering, we have this aversion to it. You know, oh, not that again. Oh, I don't like that. So rather than getting caught up in it and magnifying it and making it worse, and I'll use an example. Let's say we're the sort of person that has migraine headaches. And we know from our example that even if we take medication, it doesn't really help. We just have to wait it out. Of course, if we have a migraine headache, usually we go, oh, not migraine headache again, go away. Soon as we have aversion to that, all that happens is it magnifies the suffering we experience. So we don't want to magnify suffering through aversion. One easy way or simple way to stop aversion is practice what's called acceptance. And here I think, maybe I didn't mention, but another famous quote, yeah, I think I did in one of the meditations, famous quote from Shanti Deva, again the great Indian master, if a situation can be remedied, why get upset? And if a situation cannot be remedied, what's the point in getting upset? So if we've got a migraine headache, if we can fix it, no need to get upset, we fix it, we take medication or whatever. If we can't remedy it, there's no solution to it, no point in getting upset. Practice acceptance. So acceptance means in the present moment, I'm experiencing this, I can either accept that or I can have aversion to it and simply magnify suffering. So if we practice acceptance, and of course acceptance doesn't mean resignation, if we can do something about it to fix it, we fix it. If we can't do anything about it, okay, we accept the fact it's there, it too will pass. If we practice acceptance, we won't develop aversion, we won't magnify the amount of suffering we experience. So that's the first step. On top of that, we can use this difficult situation as fuel for the spiritual path. Meaning, if we, say, have a migraine headache and we just have to wait it out, so we practice acceptance at least, then on top of that, we can say, okay, I'm not the only person on the planet who's now experiencing a migraine headache. There are probably thousands and thousands of others who are currently experiencing migraine headaches and probably something much worse than me. So we can then use a little bit the Tonglen approach. We can say, by me willingly accepting my migraine headache, may all others be free of their migraine headaches. So we can take all their migraine headaches from them using the Tonglen, and then we can give them loving kindness and peace and well-being. So we can do this. And so then we can use that as an opportunity to develop ourselves. And you may be surprised that if we do that sort of practice, because we're so focused on helping others, that often even overwhelms any discomfort we feel. So you may find that actually even reduces the discomfort that we normally feel from a migraine headache. But we can take that as an opportunity, except rather than just getting self-obsessed and go, poor me, poor me, poor me, developing aversion and then making a lot more unnecessary suffering. So this is something also we can do during the day in a very practical way. Then at the end of the day, we can also finish the day in a good note. And we did a little bit that on those practices we did each evening. So, of course, if we have time to meditate in the evening, great. We can particularly do this sort of Tonglen, loving kindness, compassion practice. At least what we can do is when we lie down in our bed before we go to sleep, we can do the day review, which we looked at, remember, to review the day, how did my day go, and any harmful, non-virtuous behaviour, apply those four opponent powers of regret, reliance, thinking of a remedy, make a strong determination not to do it again. In that way, we can release that negativity and process it. And equally important, reflect on the good things we did during the day rejoice and make a strong determination to continue to do that. Also, of course, if we see others, we recall others having done something wonderful during the day, rejoice in this as well. This is this empathetic joy. I think this is something extremely important for many of us in our modern society because we have so much focus on the negative to balance. So these are two things we can do. And then, of course, in the corpse posture, the Shavasana, we can do that mindfulness exercise, noticing sensations throughout the body, relaxing and releasing any tightness or tension in the body and the mind, and then have that as a transition for going to sleep. So I think this is a very good way to finish our day as well. So that's how we can sort of set up our day to make our day most meaningful. And then one last thing is in terms of reading material for these sorts of practices, then of course I think you all received that document from Dipankar, I think it was, on the mental balance from Alan Wallace, where he talks about all of these four types of mental balance. And then of course also in this retreat I was referring to this book here called Attention Revolution from Alan Wallace. And in this is primarily the mindfulness training. He talks about the breath and the mind and an associated practice of resting in awareness. He also talks about the four immeasurable practices in here, loving kindness, compassion, empathetic joy, equanimity. So this, I think, can be a very good reference material as a basis for the practice. This is also available electronically as a Kindle book and so forth as well. So that's about all I wanted to say. So, any last questions before we finally wrap up this retreat? Yeah. Into creative. I'm not 100% sure what you mean. So when someone is engaging in a particular activity, some other idea comes up?
Exactly. See, for example, I'm traveling.
Right.
I'm in a certain state, I'm sitting somewhere. And one is because I want to be mindful of the things looking at the sensations around me, the physical and etc.
Sure. So, of course, if we are present, it means we are having good mindfulness. Our mind is calm and clear and focused. In that state, our creativity is maximized, meaning in that stillness of mind, there is a lot of space for creativity to come through. So, therefore, we can do one of two things. If we are engaging in some meaningful task, when that occurs, we can simply know, oh, that's a great idea, I'll attend to that when I'm finished with this activity. Because if we keep chopping and changing, that's a little bit counter to mindfulness. So if we are already involved in a meaningful activity, then simply note that great thought about some other thing and say, okay, when I finish this, I'll attend to that. Or if we're just sitting there in a quiet space, just being quiet, and then a great idea comes up, then of course we can directly then look at that idea and work with that idea. But if we're already engaged in something, then I think to keep jumping is a little bit counterproductive, because then we're really not really being that mindful, and we're really allowing the mind to dictate to us what we're focusing on. So therefore I think better is, in that other option, is if we're already involved in something, then just mentally note or write down and then attend to that at an appropriate time. Any other questions? Yeah. 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 I think the website is CKSL. Is it CKSL the website? CKSL.com? Dot in. So this is part of the same organisation. Tashit is part of an organisation called FPMT. That's the overarching organisation, the Foundation for Preservation of Mahayana Tradition. The headquarters is in Portland, Oregon in the US, and there are hundreds and so many centres around the world. In India, the FPMT has more or less three main centres. The Tashita Meditation Centre that I'm involved in, mainly in Dharamsala. There's another centre called Tashita in Delhi, and then the CKSL Centre here in Bangalore. They're sort of the main three main centres of FPMT in India. And then, of course, they have in Nepal, Kopan Monastery, which is a very large part of the FPMT as well. And that could also be an option, that they also run regular programs, their 10-day programs. But what they also run once a year in November, about mid-November, they run a one-month program, a sort of one-month intensive. So a lot of people who've done a little bit of initial sort of introductory training, 10 days here and there, often they then would go to that course because it's a one-month residential course in Kopan Monastery, just outside of Kathmandu on the hill behind Bodhidharma. Once a year they run the 1 month, and then throughout the year they run their 10-day programs as well. So that could also be another option close by. In Mumbai, FPMT, no, but there are, I think, a couple of groups in Mumbai, but I'm not really in contact. Actually, it was a bit unfortunate. I was a couple of years ago, there was a new group that was starting up, and I was there helping them set up, but then it sort of fell apart and sort of didn't continue, unfortunately. Dharma Rain is one group in Mumbai called Dharma Rain. They do a few things. Any other questions? Yeah. The mindfulness as opposed to... Sure, I mean, yeah, I mean, sure, that's fine. That's fine. So, yes, I mean, if you want to do a day review and then observe your mind and then go into the Shavasana, that's perfect, that's fine. The thing, of course, is that if we make it too much, what the thing that could happen is that it becomes too much and then we give up the whole lot. So, as a beginner, I think... start small and develop a habit, because sometimes as a beginner people get very enthusiastic and they go, I'm going to meditate an hour every morning and every night, and then they manage that for a week and it's too difficult, and then they give up the whole lot, they stop altogether. So rather start small and start to develop a habit that's manageable, then if we want, over time we can extend it. If we take on too much at the beginning, it's probably going to be too much, and then there's a danger that we give up the whole lot. So that's a better approach. But yes, you can do this for sure. Okay, then I'd like to just finish by first thanking Garden Samadhi Research Centre for inviting me here to do this retreat. I've very much enjoyed my time here. And then I'd also like to thank all of you for making the time and effort to come here. And I really hope that you receive some benefit out of this retreat and that you can take some of this into your life to become a better person, to improve your life, and to really help those around you as much as you can. So thank you very much.